and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019 and 2020 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for concerts by the North Carolina Symphony at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, November 21st at the Wilson Center, Cape Fear Community College in Wilmington, and at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday night, November 22nd and 23rd in Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. These performances will be conducted by guest conductor Christian Reif, and the featured violin soloist will be Brian Regan, the concertmaster for the North Carolina Symphony. Now, the program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony begins with the Overture to the School for Scandal by Samuel Barber, and that will be followed by the Concerto for Violin featuring Brian Regan, and composed by George Frederick McKay. Then, following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 2, The Short Symphony, by Aaron Copland, and that will be followed by the Symphonic Dances from West Side Story by Leonard Bernstein. Now I'll begin our reading of the program notes. First, some information about our guest conductor and the featured soloist. In July 2019, German conductor Christian Reif completed a three-year post as resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony and music director of the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra. His tenure culminated in a six-city European tour with the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra. Following a performance at the Berlin Philharmonic, the Merkur wrote of Reif that a bright future and a great career must lie ahead. In addition to his North Carolina Symphony debut with these concerts, Reif will conduct the Dallas Symphony Orchestra in an opening gala concert this season, and he makes debuts with orchestras including the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, Stavanger Symphony Orchestra, National Radio Orchestra of Romania, and the Ulster Orchestra. Christian Reif studied with Alan Gilbert at the Juilliard School, where he completed his master's degree in 2014, and he received the Charles Schiff Conducting Award. Prior to that, he received a diploma in 2012 from the Mozarteum University Salzburg. He was the winner of the 2015 German Operetta Prize, awarded by the German Music Council, and two Kultur Förderpreis Awards, given to promising artists of the region who promote cultural advancement in their communities. Now, information about Brian Regan, the Annabelle Lundy Fetterman Chair of the North Carolina Symphony, our concertmaster. Since 1990, Chicago native and North Carolina Symphony concertmaster Brian Regan has appeared as a soloist with the symphony, the North Carolina Symphony, of course, more than 100 times, making him the most frequent soloist in the orchestra's history. He was most recently featured performing Ernest Chausson's Poem in Wilmington, Raleigh, Chapel Hill, and Southern Pines. On September 13, 2001, Regan was called on with 24 hours' notice to substitute for Itzhak Perlman in the North Carolina Symphony's season-opening concert. On September 11, 2011, as part of the 10-year commemoration of the attacks on America, Regan was a featured soloist with mezzo-soprano Krista River in This Thread, a setting of Toni Morrison's Poem by composer J. Mark Scarce. That concert was televised by UNC-TV and WRAL. Before joining the North Carolina Symphony, Regan was assistant concertmaster with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. He had previously served as concertmaster of the Cleveland Institute of Music Symphony Orchestra and served on the faculty of Carnegie Mellon University. Regan is a graduate of the Cleveland Institute of Music. He made his solo debut with the Cleveland Orchestra at the age of 20. He has held faculty and visiting artist positions with Carnegie Mellon University, Chatham College, the Cleveland Institute of Music, and East Carolina University. He currently teaches privately in his home. The North Carolina Symphony begins this concert with the overture to the School for Scandal, Opus 5, by Samuel Barber. Barber was born March 9, 1910, in Westchester, Pennsylvania. He died January 23, 1981, in New York City. The work was composed in 1931. The first public performance, August 30, 1933, by the Philadelphia Orchestra, Alexander Smolens conducting. Now here is the story. Richard Sheridan's madcap comedy of manners, The School for Scandal, has delighted and scandalized audiences ever since it premiered in 1777. Samuel Barber, all his life an avid reader of literature, composed his overture not as a prelude to the play, but rather as a musical reflection of the play's spirit. The overture was Barber's first completed work for full orchestra. He composed the bulk of it while vacationing in Italy during the summer of 1931, tossing it off between tennis matches, swimming, bicycle trips, shopping expeditions, and other vacation activities. Now here's some listening tips. The overture begins with a sneering fanfare, perhaps in tribute to the play's principal female villain, Lady Sneerwell. The fanfare sets in motion a scurrying, tonally ambiguous theme, suggestive of the nefarious scandal-mongering and a plotting of Lady Sneerwell. Her hireling, snake, and arch-hypocrite Sir Joseph Surface. The contrasting second theme, a sentimental melody introduced by the oboe, perhaps represents the play's principal innocent, Maria. There are numerous rapid changes in tempo and dynamics as the two themes are developed. In one place, seven changes within 30 minutes. Now, the instrumentation for this work is as follows. It's for two flutes, piccolo, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, celesta, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs a violin concerto by George Frederick MacKay. MacKay was born June 11, 1899, in Harrington, Washington, and he died October 4, 1970, in Stateline, Nevada. The work was composed in 1940, the first performance in 1941. University of Washington Symphony Orchestra, conducted by the composer with Kensley Rosen as the soloist. Now here is the story. A true son of the West, George Frederick MacKay, was born in Eastern Washington, and except for 4 years at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York, spent his musical career for 41 years at the Composition Department of the University of Washington. He also occupied an honorary chair at the University of Southern California. MacKay was a prolific composer of hundreds of works in all genres, including opera. Described as a folklorist, his goal was to incorporate the songs and dances of the West into the classical repertoire, evoking a folk feeling. MacKay composed the violin concerto in 1940. There is a tragically dramatic quality to the entire work that suggests that it may have been a reflection of the fraught times during which it was composed. But there is no biographical indication that MacKay was directly responding to the Depression or the crisis in Europe that preceded the United States' entry into World War II. The concerto was first performed in the fall of 1941 by Kensley Rosen with the University of Washington Symphony Orchestra, conducted by the composer. North Carolina Symphony Concertmaster Brian Regan, soloist in these performances, has recorded the work for Naxos. Now here's some listening tips. McKay composes in the neo-romantic style of the late 19th century, but with greater use of dissonance. In many ways, the work resembles that of a classical composer, Erich Wolfgang Korngold, who utilized a similar style in scoring Hollywood dramatic films during the same period. The concerto's three movements are played without pause. The first movement, the flamboyant opening of the concerto, a cadenza for the soloist with orchestral punctuation, lasts nearly 2 minutes. The entire first movement is replete with solo virtuosic passage work in the same vein. The second movement, this melancholic movement, develops a melody in a classicized folk idiom that characterizes some of the composer's other works. The third movement, the jaunty brief finale, also has a cinematic quality that recalls the stereotypical rhythms used in westerns. Now, the instrumentation for this work is as follows: 2 flutes, 2 oboes, 2 clarinets, 2 bassoons, 4 horns, 3 trumpets, 3 trombones, timpani, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Symphony No. 2, so-called the Short Symphony, by Aaron Copland. Copland was born November 14, 1900, in Brooklyn, New York. He died December 2, 1990, in Sleepy Hollow, New York. The work was composed in 1931 to 1933, the first performance November 23, 1934, the Orchestra Sinfonica Nacional de Mexico. Carlos Chavez was the conductor. Now here's the story. The son of Russian Jewish immigrants, Aaron Copland was the creator of what has become a down-home American musical style, as exemplified by his Americana ballets, including the Billy the Kid, Rodeo, and Appalachian Spring. But before he reached this stage in his musical development, he sampled all the modern musical isms of the 1920s, influenced by his stay in Paris and studies with Nadia Boulanger. He especially embraced jazz, but the premiere in Boston in 1927 of his jazzy piano concerto under the baton of Sergei Koussevitzky garnered as much heat and as little light as the premiere of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring in 1913. In the early 1930s, Copland's compositional voice started to change. His Symphony No. 2, although still full of the complex, jagged rhythms so dear to the composers of the 1920s, already sounds like the Copland that we are more familiar with. Composed from 1931 to 1933, the symphony was premiered by the Orchestra Sinfonica Nacional de Mexico under Carlos Chavez. Both the Philadelphia Orchestra under Leopold Stokowski and the Boston Symphony Orchestra under Sergei Koussevitzky canceled promised performances, finding it so rhythmically intricate that they dared not attempt it within the allotted rehearsal period. The U.S. premiere came finally in 1944 with the NBC Symphony Orchestra under Stokowski, in what Copland called an extremely inadequate reading. Coincidentally, the Symphony No. 2 premiered in the U.S. the same year as Appalachian Spring, perhaps Copland's most beloved composition. If Stokowski and Koussevitzky couldn't manage the rhythms, the great dancer Martha Graham, who premiered Appalachian Spring, certainly could. So could Copland's student, Leonard Bernstein. Now here's some listening tips. The symphony's three movements proceed without pause and complex syncopation, and abrupt changes in mood and tempo create an episodic effect throughout. Right from the opening bars, the open intervals seem like a musical foreshadowing of the Appalachian Spring Ballet. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: for 2 flutes, 1 doubling as the alto flute, piccolo, 2 oboes, English horn, 2 clarinets, bass clarinet, 2 bassoons, contrabassoon, 4 horns, 2 trumpets, piano, and strings. And then the North Carolina Symphony concludes the concert this evening with the Symphonic Dances from West Side Story by Leonard Bernstein. Now, Bernstein was born August 25, 1918, in Lawrence, Massachusetts. He died October 14, 1990, in New York City. This work was composed in 1961, the first performance, February 13, 1961, by the New York Philharmonic. Lucas Foss was the conductor. Now here is the story. West Side Story was Leonard Bernstein's attempt to demonstrate that it was possible to write a Broadway musical with the characteristics of high art. He succeeded beyond all expectations, with lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and with Jerome Robbins as director and choreographer. The show opened on Broadway on September 26, 1957, and ran for more than 1,000 performances. Now, the movie was just as spectacular a success as was the recording. But its birth was not easy. The show was originally conceived 8 years earlier as a conflict between Jews and Catholics during the Easter Passover celebrations, and at one point was to be called East Side Story. The protagonists were finally switched to ethnic gangs on the Upper West Side, but no backers could be found. West Side Story became notorious for having been turned down by nearly every producer because no one thought that such a tragic story was suitable material for Broadway. Finally, Harold Prince and Robert Griffith, two successful Broadway producers, emerged as the show's financial angels. Casting was another problem. The perfectionist Robbins wanted a cast of 38 who could both dance and sing, a nearly impossible demand in those days, but now the rule rather than the exception. A choreographer first and foremost, Robbins finally settled on dancers who could sing as opposed to singers who could dance. When Bernstein re-recorded West Side Story in 1988, unencumbered by staging constraints, he used opera singers for the main roles, Kiri Takanawa, Jose Carreras, Tatiana Troyanos, and Marilyn Horne. It became another bestseller. While describing the tragic life of ordinary people in a New York Puerto Rican ghetto, West Side Story tackles an archetypal theme, love clashing with prejudice and clan hatred. In other words, it is an inner-city Romeo and Juliet. Here's some listening tips. The symphonic dances, which Bernstein extracted from the musical, are not arranged in the order of the original show. The suite consists of 9 segments played without pause. First, the prologue. Violence rises between the two street gangs, the Sharks and the Jets, portrayed with harsh, jazzy dissonances and rhythms. Somewhere, in Tony and Maria's idyllic dream sequence, the gangs are joined in friendship and the lovers are united. Scherzo, the dream continues as the two gangs leave the city for the idyllic countryside. Mambo, the rival gangs compete at a school dance. Cha-cha, Tony and Maria from opposing gangs meet for the first time and dance together. Meeting scene, the lovers hesitantly exchange their first words. Cool fugue, the hostility of the Jets gradually builds in anticipation of street warfare. Rumble, the violent, dissonant climax results in the final tragedy in which both rival gang leaders are killed. And the finale, Tony dies in Maria's arms, a victim of gang violence. In an ironic twist, the dream melody of Somewhere hauntingly reappears during the funeral procession. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: 3 flutes, 1 doubling as piccolo, 2 oboes, English horn, 2 clarinets, E-flat clarinet, bass clarinet, alto saxophone, 2 bassoons, contrabassoon, 4 horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, celesta, piano, harp, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019-2020 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.